Hi folks, welcome to the Money 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 podcast. I'm Surabhi Upadhyay and we come to you every week with some very interesting conversations to help you get your personal finances in order and get smart with your money. The clock is ticking and the countdown to the budget 2020 is on. Will Finance Nirmala Sitharaman put more money in the hands of we the people? Will an income tax cut come through? What about taxes that govern our lives with respect to capital gains and property? Welcome to this pre-budget edition of Money, Money, Money with me, Surabhi Upadhyay. How will our personal finances look like after the 1st of February? We have a lot to discuss, and joining me this week in this conversation to do that are Ashish Somaya, CEO of Motilal Oswal AMC, Kamlesh Rao, MD and CEO of Aditya Birla Sun Life Insurance, Ishita Sen Gupta, partner personal taxation at PwC, and NS Venkatesh, chief executive at Amfi. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining in. We live in very interesting times because we are nicely warmed up to the 1st of Feb. It's a very interesting panel because I have representation from the life insurance sector and the mutual fund sector today. So before we get down to the nitty-gritties, first glance, first thoughts, Kamlesh, what do you think? Is this going to be the Aam Aadmi budget?
I think what I'd watch out for in this budget essentially is, they don't wait for making announcements now on budget. So I think the execution of what they've already announced is also something that we want to watch out for. But I think it's going to be where more money is going to come into the hands of customers. That's what we think. The other thing I'd watch out for is whether the fiscal deficit stands, because with so much announced, I don't know whether the stance is going to be accommodating or we're going to start doing a little worrying about it. And I think from a market's point of view, it's really good time to look at whether LTCG, which got launched, did it do any benefit? Because finally, if you look at last 2 years' data, not much money has come in. And my view is it's easier to raise it through a small correction in STT and not worry about LTCG as much on the other side.
Okay, abolish LTCG. Every year before the budget, right? That's the big cry that goes out. But Ishita, I mean, everyone's saying income tax cut, will it, won't it? What's your biggest expectation?
Lot of hype, lot of expectations, and the corporate tax rates have just propelled that a little more. I think a rationalization in the slabs, more than the rates, a rationalization in the slabs would do a lot of good, because we're, you know, everybody's talking about increasing purchasing power, pushing up demand. So that would go a long way. So that expectation is there. How much the finance minister will honestly be able to do will also depend, because they are having a revenue crunch. So it will always have a side effect, but somebody has to take a bold step.
Okay, and that's what we wish for.
Yes.
Ashish, what do you think is going to be the biggest headline on the 2nd of Feb in the newspapers?
It has to be. See, frankly, there's not much choice. It has to be expansionary. The reason is because you will have deficit with growth or you will have deficit without growth. That's the choice you have to actually make. Right now, we have deficit going up without growth. The only way to get the deficit in control from a mid to long-term perspective is to get the growth back. You know, because by controlling deficit, you don't control deficit. That's the whole point. So it has to be expansionary as far as I understand it. And, you know, how they go about it is critical, because typically if we expect that they should boost up consumption, then that would be short-lived. But if they can really do something to kickstart the investment cycle and the economic confidence, then I think that could be lasting. That is what I understand.
Mr. Venkatesh.
I would say that it will be a pro-growth budget, definitely, because growth is at its abysmally low levels. So definitely the impetus will be on growth. So towards that, whatever is required, whether it is through investments or through maybe putting money in the hands of the people by the tax cuts, that will definitely play a major part. The big headlines could be a personal income tax cut, which can happen, and maybe a long-term capital gains tax cuts that can happen.
That'll be a sweet dual bonanza, right, if both happen. Yeah. But on the subject of taxation, Ishita, just to come to the slight nitty-gritties, you mentioned a regime in the slabs. Now, we don't know, there is a direct tax code, there's a panel that submitted a report, so we don't know if that's something that's going to be taken up. But what is the kind of recalibrization that you would like to see in the slabs?
So the DTC has come in many avatars, a lot of analysis, a lot of talk, but has not taken off the ground. So we don't know which way that will go, be that as it may. From the slab perspective, clearly, I mean, we would like to see maybe a doubling the slabs. So right now you have 0 to 2.5 lakhs at 0%, 2.5 to 5 at 10%, at 20%. At 5%, sorry. Mm-hmm. And then you have the other slabs at 10 and 20, at 20 and 30. Mm. Peaking at 10 lakhs, 10 lakhs is too low an amount for a 30% slab.
To get the maximum marginal
yes.
rate.
Mm. The finance minister had given a rebate. So effectively, a salaried person even earning somewhere around the range of, say, 9.5 lakhs, need not pay tax. Mm. If you know he's investing and claiming all the deductions, etc., then you get that. Mm-hmm. The point is, if you're talking of increasing purchasing power, I would say push it, go to the higher slabs a bit, particularly say, 15 lakh to 30 lakhs income level. Mm. They need a bigger impact.
And they're the real middle
they
class.
They are the real middle class. Mm. They are the ones who have got families, who have got home loans, who have got desires, And if you want to propel spending, you should do something about that slab.
That's an interesting thought. I hope she is listening sake of everybody around the great Indian middle class.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask the panel what to do about ATC. It's a universal, request and hope that you enhance it now from 1.5 lakhs, whether it goes to 2, we don't know. But Kamlesh, if you were to give a new recipe, would you call for unbundling? Would you look at carve-outs, separate carve-outs for insurance and, the types of savings instruments you can have? What to do with the big ATC reduction?
I think you've got to look at it from A, the absolute value, and B, I think the best utilization of the value if you want to move it up. Look at the disparity today. So NPS has been created as 50,000 category. But if there are large range of pension products that insurance companies offer, that doesn't fit into that bucket. Mm. So you give customers a wider choice, so at least within what you have, if you can also create the same 50,000 category for, say, pension products offered by life insurance.
So extend the additional 50,000 deduction that NPS has
also
onto
to
pension
products of life insurance. I think the gamut obviously gets larger. If you look at the tax pattern on the NPS, whatever you pay up front, 60%, that is tax exempted, but the corpus on annuity is taxable.
Yes.
So maybe that requires some kind of a correction. And if you look at insurance in India, which is protection as a product, I think it's the most underpenetrated as far as India is concerned. And anything that you want to make sure goes off on a big scale, if there's a possibility for the first time insurer perhaps to get a separate carve out of tax benefit, or for that matter, women coverage for insurance is extremely low in India today. So that could be another segment that could get looked at.
Okay.
So if you can create some of these pockets used rightfully and for achieving the right purpose, I think that could be a better utilization of the ATC.
Okay, that's a thought process on the life insurance side. Ashish and Mr. Venkatesh, how would you treat ATC differently, if at all?
So it might sound counterintuitive, but fundamentally, I think that insurance is the only thing which should have a dedicated good reward or tax rebate. The reason being that I agree with Kamlesh that it is significantly underpenetrated, and it is a must, right? We don't have social security and we don't have so much of pension and all these things, so it is a 100% must. So I think that whatever those limits are, insurance is the thing which should have like something really carved out separately. And it should be like a special status.
Okay.
Everything else, if you really ask me, they all are investment products.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, I am from the mutual fund, so you might think that I will say there should be a carve-out for...
You're being very large-hearted, right? You're saying no, not necessarily have a carve-out for mutual funds.
Yeah, so the disclosure is that we own a lot of insurance stocks, so I need that as a
There we go. There's always a catch, right?
No, but that is, frankly, that's more fundamental in nature on a lighter note, I was saying. But I'm saying from a fundamental perspective, the reason being that I think Kamlesh is right that most people don't know how much insurance they should have. They are underinsured at all points in time.
Let's straight away right now go across to my colleague Sumaira Abidi, who's joining in to encapsulate for us the expectations of the mutual fund world. Sumaira.
The Association of Mutual Funds has sent a wish list to the finance minister, including many demands that haven't been addressed in the past. Let's start with the debt schemes. Here, AMFI has again proposed the debt-linked savings scheme, much like the ELSS that we have grown to love. Investments up to 1.5 lakhs should be eligible for tax benefit with a 5-year lock-in. AMFI has also requested clarity regarding the side-pocketing rule in the debt fund, saying the move is undertaken to protect investors' interests in the case of a credit event, and the STCG and the short-term capital gains over here should be exempt. One with the maximum interest is AXE LTCG. Recognize equity mutual funds as specified long-term assets which don't attract LTCG and channelize at least some of the gains from the sale of immovable property into the capital markets. On gold and commodity ETFs, the ask is to lower the holding period to 1 year from 3 years. similar to listed debt securities. Dividend distribution tax is another big bracket. For equity mutual funds, they ask that the category be brought at par with ULIPs, as ULIPs don't pay tax on the bonus declared, which is similar to dividends in a mutual fund. Likewise, EEE or exempt status of debt schemes under Section 80CCD with an overall ceiling of 1.5 lakhs. Exemption also for EPFO, NPS, insurance companies and so on who invest in equity mutual funds. Again, on the securities transaction tax, EEE status is sought for equity mutual funds. And finally, interest scheme switches within a fund house should be exempt from payment of capital gains tax.
All right, Sumaira, thank you very much for that. Mr. Venkatesh, I mean, you heard it, remove LTCG and this whole thing of parity between ULIPs and mutual funds. Yeah. I actually want to take your specific sort of point on that. You could really argue that it is unfair. You don't have to pay LTCG if you invest in a ULIP, but you have to pay it in a mutual fund.
Yeah. So essentially what we are trying to say is ULIPs is nothing but an investment product with an insurance wraparound. Mm-hmm. So to that much extent, it's a pure investment product. It is not like any other insurance protection product.
It doesn't meet your overall big basic protection goals. Yeah.
So what we are trying to say is any product which mirrors an investment, it should actually have the same tax treatment. Otherwise, there could be a tax arbitrage. Mm-hmm. So in order to avoid all this tax arbitrage, even SEBI has published a paper in 2016 saying that all equal products should have equal taxation. Mm-hmm. So if that is a premise under which we are discussing, we believe that the ULIPs as well as maybe the mutual fund product should be put on the same line as far as tax is concerned.
So let me ask you, apart from the long-term capital gains tax, is there any other
switches? Sort of essentially, if you switch, in a mutual fund, if you switch, it is treated as a transfer. And again, the taxation falls in. Mm-hmm. But whereas in ULIPs, you can switch. So it doesn't attract any transfer related taxation aspect at all on that.
You know, let me take that to the tax expert as well. And Ishita, I mean, from the mutual fund investor's point of view, I'd agree. If you're in a bad fund and after 1 year you want to just get out of it, put that money in a different fund. You're not using that money.
But right
you
now
still
it's subject to
tax.
Capital gains, yes.
So
that clearly, I mean, that is something which would help investors a lot because then you are really stuck because it's a trade-off between you carry on or you pay the tax. So that is certainly something that, you know, when switching between funds, if they can take away the tax on that.
Okay. Your thoughts? There's a huge cry for parity over here, Kamlesh.
I'm not sure, Subhi, whether there's parity because I think the ULIP product comes with an inbuilt 10 times of the premium as a life cover. And remember that for the fund value to become 10 times of what you pay in the first year takes a reasonable amount of time. And that's the reason the investor is long-term invested. So I don't think there are comparable products, and I've been part of the mutual fund industry before. And I think if you look
but
at the
primary, the argument that Mr. Venkatesh makes, that they're primarily investment products. They're not pure protection products.
They give you 10 times of the premium you pay as life cover. If somebody paying 1 lakh gets a 10 lakh insurance cover, and that could immediately in the sixth month of time, if something happens, you got to pay the 10 lakh rupees. Talking of disparities, where ULIPs are allowed to invest versus the mutual funds are allowed to invest also, there is a reasonable disparity.
Okay.
If you look at, there is an element of long-term nature of the investments that we make. For example, mutual fund can easily hedge by buying something on the derivative side, on the Nifty, whereas ULIP guys are not allowed to do that. So there is fundamental difference between the product. Mm-hmm. And I think a ULIP comes with an inherent protection built in. If you remove that out, and it today for getting a 1010D benefit, it is required to be 10 times. So you don't have an option. ULIP doesn't have an option, to offer that product. If that goes away, and that could be one of the asks, if you want to compare like-to-like investment product, then maybe it'll be comparable at that point in time.
Okay, that's a strong counter argument. I take that. But Ashish, you know, again, mutual funds is not just long-term capital gains tax, right? Now dividends are getting taxed, which actually kind of took the sheen away from an entire class of mutual funds. Yeah. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, because, you know, I think that any which way this dividend is fundamentally an issue across the asset class and not just mutual funds. Because if you see, you know, look at the company level, you know, companies are paying tax on the income. When they pass on the income to the rightful owners of the company, there is again a distribution tax. And then if that guy receives more than 10 lakhs, then he again pays tax. Yeah. Now, what is the impact of this? It's far-reaching impact, mm-hmm. you know, because it increases your expected return on equity. So it's best, and there are countries, I'm not saying, you might find it funny, but say Brazil. Mm. Brazil has minimum dividend obligation. Mm. You have to pay certain part of your profit back to the owners of the company.
Now it's all tax. Dividends are taxed 20%, buybacks taxed at 20%.
Yeah, so, but why are you...
To counter the fact that dividends are taxed and buybacks are not.
What is it, but what is it with insisting that if a company is returning profits back to the rightful owners, why should it be taxed once more?
Let me ask Ishita. Ishita, dividends. Now, there's a huge debate.
There is
what
a triple taxation. You know, mm-hmm. So, as Ashish explained, that you have the company paying tax on its profits, then you're distributing the profits, you're paying dividend distribution tax, and then the income in the hands of the shareholder, of course, you have a 10 lakh there, and you know, once you breach that, that's when it becomes taxable
and,
at 10%.
Let's not forget that it's not just about owners of shares anymore. I mean, even if you're a mutual fund investor, there's that 10%
So directly or indirectly, but whoever is investing in equities, you are getting taxed there.
So what can be the ideal
thing
structure?
If I may take the argument back to this year's expectations, because I think the need of the hour, as I said, is to pump up demand, consumer demand. And when you're looking at the threshold, because taking this away will impact those who are already earning more than 10 lakhs dividend, because that class below is still not taxed on dividend. So if the push is to push up the middle class, then for this year's budget, this may be a second priority item. But yes, Ashish spoke about sentiment a little while back. And sentiment is a big thing in India.
So she may not look at dividends. It might not be sort of top of mind immediately.
It may not be.
Mr. Venkatesh, before we wind up this part of the conversation, what about debt mutual funds? They've gone through their own roller coaster and continue to go through these somersaults even as we speak. In terms of taxation, is there anything that you're seeking?
No, essentially what we are trying to say again on the debt long-term capital gains. Again, what we are trying to say is, if you hold a debenture yourself, there the holding period is only 1 year period. But if you had invested into a debt mutual fund, then you let hold it for 3 years to get that long-term cap. So what we are trying to say is make it rational. Rationalize that, say that for 1 year if you hold, then automatically it becomes eligible for the long-term capital gains.
The other thing which is always discussed is that for debt it's 3 years, real estate is 2 years, and equity is 1 year. I mean, there's no definition of long-term.
So we need to rationalize this. That is what we have talked. The other thing that we have talked about is a totally different thing for funding the infrastructure projects of this country. Long-term funds are required, and that too from the retail side it should come in. So we have suggested that why not, just like an equity-linked savings scheme, why don't you put a debt-linked savings scheme?
And now it's time to shift the debate to the asset class as a whole. You know, Kamlesh, we've seen the thrust on financial products and the financialization of the economy since demonetization. But let's face it, I mean, real estate is capturing headlines for all kinds of reasons as well. Would you be surprised or would you be disappointed if more of the tax breaks and the focus went back to property this year?
Actually not. I think that's one segment which drives, it's like the cash market which can drive the derivative market completely. So from an economic point of view, I'm saying anything in that area, in the physical assets and more for homes, would spark off consumption in so many other related areas, and that would be a welcome. But I've always been a believer that property is meant for consumption and not necessarily for investment. So for people who haven't done that, I think the first point is to make sure that you get your consumption right, make sure you have your first home. You got to be a little more careful as an asset class when you're investing in property versus buying yours versus staying on rent.
So again, what could be the right balancing act here, Ishita? Because they did this capping of the loss on house property, I think a year or two back, where you can't carry forward the loss more than 2 lakhs in a year. What should be done? As he's saying, you don't want to spur speculation.
Increase that.
Oh, increase the loss on house property limit.
Increase the amount that you are allowed to set off. The other thing which happened in the interim budget is that they came up with a provision that you could have 2 self-occupied properties, which you can claim as exempt from tax. But they capped the loss set off at 2 lakhs, both combined. So spread that out. Give it for, because if you are paying interest for each house property,
houses,
two different house properties, then why not claim an exemption?
Okay, Ashish, your thoughts. I mean, you look at property stocks listed in the equity market, they are at multi-month or multi-year highs. Property itself is not moving. What would you want to hear?
So, sometimes we try to forecast, but sometimes we should listen to what the market says. So maybe the market is trying to tell us that what she's saying, something of that type, is like a dire need and it might happen and, you know, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and, you know, all of us might be sounding like there are so many things we want the budget to do, but it's a fact. I mean, you know, real estate is stuck. Mm-hmm. And that is a huge place where, you know, look, the liquidity, you know, the lenders' equity, so many things are stuck out there. So you need to get it out of the morass in which it is actually stuck.
Okay, so focus on real estate perhaps is the need of the hour. Let's come down to final thoughts. We need to sum this up. So, Mr. Venkatesh, starting with you, if there was that one line advice or request or, you know, a letter that you'd had to send to the finance minister, what would you tell her just before the budget?
I will tell her to do the debt-linked savings schemes, because I believe that that will give a lot of money for the infrastructure, mm-hmm. and infrastructure investment will propel a lot of growth-related opportunities, and along with growth, employment will also.
Okay, so the DLSS, just like the ELSS. Ashish?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, I mean, what I said in the beginning, that, you know, look, you will have deficit. Mm. So now the choice is whether you want deficit without growth or you want deficit with growth.
Okay.
It's sounding so oversimplified, but eventually that's
what... But deficit what, with growth, I think that just sounds better.
Yeah, that's the only way deficit will come down. I mean, there's no other way.
Ishita, pay attention to the middle class.
The 15 to 30 lakhs.
Absolutely.
That's the big
Do
one.
Something about them.
Okay, I completely take that on board. Kamlesh, your final thoughts.
I think accommodative stance on fiscal deficit is extremely important, because mm-hmm. this is the time where you need to kickstart the economy all over again. Mm-hmm. Anything else that we do that doesn't make that happen, and you did one of the biggest things in taxation for companies, but it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So I think at this point of time, it needs to be jerked a little harder, mm-hmm. and that's what they should focus on in the budget.
Well, we've got lots of thoughts and very interesting ideas from this panel. So thank you all very much for joining in. Let's see, we are all waiting by for the 1st of February, and maybe then we'll reconnect again and see what eventually really comes out. That's it on this week's podcast. You can catch the show at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays with repeats on Saturday and Sunday mornings only on CNBC TV 18. You can also find us on the CNBC TV 18 YouTube channel. Do send your feedback, comments, queries. Catch me on Twitter. My handle is at Surabhi Upadhyay. That's S-U-R-A-B-H-I-U-P-A-D-H-Y-A-Y. Don't forget to add the hashtag money. Catch you next week.